The Unconventional Therapist's Guide to Nothing.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is The Unconventional Therapist. I am your host, Dave. I'm joined here with my co-host, Greg. Greg, how's it going?
It's going great. It's great. I love this time of year. You know what's coming up?
Summer?
My birthday. Thanks, though.
Why would you like that?
I love it.
You're so old.
Okay. Yep. That's true.
Is this the year that you're getting your ear pierced finally and getting that convertible you've always wanted?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Midlife crisis a little bit? Yeah, I could be. It could be. Dave, what do you mean? A year younger than me? 6 months?
Not even. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I'm glad we're doing this. All right. Come on, man. 40 is the new, 27?
I mean, it is pretty young.
Right?
In the grand scheme of things.
Yeah. Come on. We're babies. It's a couple babies having a podcast.
You know how I know we're old, though? When that whole, and I know we already talked about it, but that whole solar eclipse happened, like just remembering the last time we had one made me feel old.
Yeah. What makes me feel old is like there's so many things that I can't do now. Like I can't go be a Navy SEALer. I can't go be, not that I would. I'm just saying, like you hit an age where you're like, all right, so I'm not going to be a professional athlete unless maybe pickleball or cornhole. Does that count?
No, when we were in grad school, I had a thought. I was like, I wonder if I can still try out for the basketball team. Imagine that.
You can try out.
That would have been awesome. I wonder what the oldest person to try out for like a college team has been.
Look, they have all kinds of teams. And Dave, if that's something that you saw for yourself, you should have gave it a shot. All right, because now it's just a what if.
If I go back to school and try out for a team.
You can do that. Like even just get a different degree, go to art school or something. That so we can do our own designs and everything.
I was thinking about learning how to skateboard.
Yeah. So
am I here for that?
Yes, you are.
Why?
You are because I often tell I have a patient, she's around our age, and she was like, there's nothing out there. Like all the guys still act so young, like carrying around their skateboards at like bars and stuff like that. I mean, it was a little hyperbolic, but I don't know. You know, it's a person who acts their age like us. You know, Lorne Michaels says there's something about a man in his 40s and a woman in her 20s. That's when they're at their peak, he thought. I don't know how you feel about that.
I don't know.
I want to think that's true just because I'm in my 40s. I don't know.
I can still skateboard, Greg.
Okay. You can ollie and all that, kickflip. Good. Dave, back to the books.
Okay.
All right. Mm-hmm. So today we're going to talk about a book, but not, well, yeah, for the usual reasons that we do, but also because, there's all kinds of interesting facts about the book that we're going to talk about. This book is on the list of classics with Huck Finn and Great Gatsby, which honestly, whenever there's like the great books that conversation's happening, like Great Gatsby, for example, didn't even like it. So,
yeah. Oh, you're one of those guys.
Yeah, like I'm slightly let down.
You intentionally don't like it because it's considered to be a must read.
No, well, it's not that I intentionally don't. It's just that I happen not to. Maybe
I think it's because you criticize it or you're more critical of it because you're feeling like you're supposed to like it.
I think that there is something about that, but that's just my ignorance because I'm forgetting that at one point. This was like a brand new thing and awesome and groundbreaking, but it's just so many things have happened that are like it since then that it kind of makes it lose its luster a little bit.
Is that not what you said when you first read the Bible?
Yep. This thing's really losing its luster. Unfortunately, it is. And,
this isn't even that good. This is a must read. Wow. Boring.
Speaking of the Bible, I mean, was the Bible ever a banned book? Because this was. It's always on the list of like the most banned books. And why is that? It's a lot of reasons.
You didn't even say what we're reading.
Catcher in the Rye. Catcher in the Rye.
Okay.
This thing's interesting. It's found on the person of multiple murderers, stalkers, criminally insane. We're not going to, that's not what this podcast is going to be out solely. There's a lot of great elements to this story. But I kind of wanted that to be one of the questions that we answer with this book. Like, why Catcher in the Rye. Like, why did people on the fringes of society sort of identify with this thing? And Dave, I gotta say this too. So knowing that going in, I had read this book years and years ago, but knowing that going in again, I gotta admit, I was a little, hesitant or nervous to read something that sort of nudged so many people into this state of hysteria.
Wait, say that again. You already read it or you didn't read it before?
No, I had read it.
Oh, okay.
And I read it differently this time. I kind of have a completely different take than I did the first time.
Mm. Do you remember when you read it last?
It was probably my mid-20s.
Yeah, same.
Okay. But, you know, so that feeling of being nervous reading this, it kind of made me think of something we talk about all the time. You know,
you're being serious? You're really nervous?
Yeah, I'm being serious. Wow. Because
wow. This, I'm judging you.
You should. But it could, I don't, like, not super nervous. Listen, I read it. But, you know, it just reminded me of that whole thing. Like, we can have bad thoughts. We can hear bad thoughts. We can see bad thoughts. But we can, and that doesn't make us bad. That doesn't mean we're going to fall into these things. Like, we can simply observe it without engaging. And that's kind of the way I approach this book. Yeah, I'm going to observe, like, how would this person, you know, like, what is it about this person that makes people, I don't know, what would that, you know, makes scary people identify with him? And is that even the case? Because it's a little unfair to judge it that way, I think, too.
I could just answer that question and end this episode right now.
No,
I'll just do a mic drop.
Don't do it.
Be done.
Do it at the end. Save it. Save your mic.
We'll torture them. We'll make them hear your thoughts first, and then we'll
come
around to the answer.
Torture as usual, right?
Then we'll come around to the answer. No problem.
Should we do a little?
Proceed, Greg.
Proceed. Okay. Well, thanks, Dave. I feel great. Synopsis. Let's do a little. What's this thing about? So this started off as a short story in The New Yorker. And
multiple short stories.
Multiple shorts. Yes, you're right. Like, this character was in multiple
family.
Short stories.
Yeah, like, yep. His family.
Yep, absolutely. Which is interesting, right? So the character in question here is Holden Caulfield, and he's this whiny, depressed, traumatized teen who gets kicked out of a prep school to roam the streets of New York City for a few days and nights. So when I mentioned I read it when I was 25 years old, the first time I read it as, like, I'm in the passenger seat of someone slipping into psychosis. And I didn't really read it like that this time. But some people see it that way. And some people see it as Holden as, like, a hero.
So just to clarify with that synopsis. So he's kicked out of prep school.
Mm-hmm.
He leaves because he doesn't want to stay there any longer. And because he has, like, two more days or something like that. Is it two or three more days? He decides to leave the school, but he can't go home because then his parents will know he was kicked out of school and he doesn't want to break that news to them yet.
Right.
So he spends those few days kind of roaming the streets, like Greg said.
Roaming,
so that's how that all, yeah. And kind of just observing and having encounter after encounter.
It's a beautiful word, observing. That's exactly what's going on. And he's isolated. He's isolated too, which is dangerous because that observing is happening, right? But you don't have anyone around you to check your behaviors and put your more, you know, out there thoughts into check.
Yeah. Right? So super interesting way of narrating. It's hard to tell at first. Is this a story that he's recollecting for us as, you know, as the reader, or like, or is he telling somebody else? Or are we literally just getting his own thoughts in his head, like as if we were hearing his own inner monologue? At times, it's questionable.
This is Christine Estrada with Living Purpose Podcast. Do you know what your purpose is? What makes you tick? What motivates you to discover new things? Where do you find the motivation and strength to lean in to searching for that purpose? All of these are questions that I have had for many years. And if you're like me and these questions have been ruminating for you, or you just love good stories about everyday people doing everyday greatness, then you have found the space. I invite you to come sit with Living Purpose Podcast and lean into the beauty of storytelling. This is where stories matter. Consider joining us every month as we dive into discovering new pathways to purpose.
Yes. So that you're bringing up something which I find fascinating, which I think is like something that people miss about this story. So yes, he's scary. And I'm getting into this about like what, whether it's his thoughts or not his thoughts. So this person could be psychotic or completely normal, right? That these are the two choices. You kind of relate to him. You kind of don't. But to me, he's not really insane. He's something else. He's not part of cliques. He's not part of, he's existing outside of social norms, but we see him as crazy. And the reason why we see him as crazy and diagnosable is because we are hearing his inner thoughts. So, Dave, if I followed you around all day and heard your inner thoughts, I think that you would probably be diagnosable. Is that true?
Let me ask you, why are you saying that our, where are you getting that from as far as like that he could be psychotic? I from like my reading of this, that wasn't like one of the conclusions I drew. So okay, I'm wondering where you get that.
Is that a
general thought that society has of this book?
Well, I don't know. It's certainly people feel that, you know, we failed to mention too that his brother passed away, which is a really important part of the story. So he's experienced a severe trauma.
Yeah. Let's run through this. Cause like, I feel like, and for people to truly understand what we're saying, there has to be some context to this conversation.
Okay. Give it a little bit of better of a synopsis. I'm sorry. Right.
So he leaves school. Well, his last 2 days, the last day in the dorm is just filled with conflict, right? So he has a roommate. He has another individual who I guess, I don't know if it's like a suite at the school that is there and he's kind of annoyed with him all the time. But his roommate ends up going on a date with a girl that he used to know. And that girl, he has this fond memory of playing chess with her and she keeps her kings in the back row. That's this line that he keeps repeating. And it's this idea of like this fondness of something they used to share together. And he's asking, you know, the guy, his roommate questions, like, what are you going to do with her? And the guy's kind of being a little coy, but his roommate comes back from the date later that night and Holden. Oh, and the roommate also asked him to do some homework assignment for him. Mm-hmm. The homework assignment was write about whatever you want in great detail. So the roommate comes back, checks for the homework assignment that Holden did. And while Holden's giving him the homework assignment, Holden's like, you know, what'd you do with her? What'd you do with her? And he uses this word like, did you get, he always talks about sex, like sexy. He says like, mm-hmm. did you get sexy with her? And then if he's getting aroused, he calls it feeling sexy. Mm-hmm. So he's like asking this question about like, did you get sexy with her? Basically. And the guy won't, his roommate won't answer. So Holden gets really mad and it's like hard to understand. Is he getting jealous? Is he angry because he thinks something he did something bad to her? It's hard to like really, and we're just getting to know Holden at this point. So it's really hard to understand like where this is coming from. The homework assignment that he did for his roommate was, he ended up telling the story about his little brother who passed away from leukemia, about his baseball glove. And it was basically Holden, you know, retelling some memories about that baseball glove and nostalgic, you know, kind of shows like a sensitive side, kind of shows he has this grief that he's never really processed.
Yeah.
And he's holding on to that. And then when the roommate's like, what is this? Why did you write about a baseball glove? Holden just loses it between that and the jealousy. And he just goes off on his roommate, punches him. Then the roommate ends up punching, you know, Holden back. There's this tussle. Needless to say, Holden decides he's not going to be staying at that dorm any longer. And that's when he leaves for New York, right?
Right. So which is a sort of an irrational decision, violence. And he just will go on from there to, I think his behaviors get more and more sort of erratic and he hates everyone. Everyone's fake. And I don't know, maybe, you know, as I read this, as I'm older, it's like, I don't know, there's some interesting parts there. Is some of that true? And I think that you don't notice it. A lot of people don't notice how the behaviors get worse and worse as time goes on because you're with him the whole time. And I think if you know somebody and if you know somebody's whole story, it's harder to hate them. You sort of understand them better. It's interesting. And he's nostalgic for things. How is he nostalgic for things as a teenager? That's an interesting thing, right? He talks about, you know, the glove. So obviously he misses his brother. He's nostalgic for that. But he talks about the ducks leaving the pond. I mean, that makes him depressed. Then the Sopranos might have ran with that, huh? Isn't that sort of interesting?
So, there's this idea of like, is it nostalgic or is it longing? And you know, I know those two things can kind of be the same. When we did our nostalgia episode, it was kind of like, when is nostalgia like not healthy? And I guess it can be when you can't let go And right. it almost feels like, I don't think he's necessarily at an unhealthy point, but I think what that nostalgia represents is this intense longing of his childhood. So, I mean, he's 18. He's becoming an adult. He is leaving his childhood behind. And one of the things, like, as he's walking through the streets, Greg mentioned how he's like, you know, just kind of hates everybody. Anytime he sees interactions happening, he has like this immediate judgment that happens. So his instinct is that I'm going to hate all these, like, and essentially he's like seeing adults. He's not looking at kids and having these negative judgments. It's always adults. So yeah, if he hears laughing, it's like, oh, those, they're always laughing at these corny jokes that they're probably not even funny. They always laugh at not, and he has this like way of like when he observes something, he gives it like this definitive thing, like it always happens that way. So it'd be like, oh, I hate it when it happens that way. And it always happens that way, even if it was like this one observation he just made. But he's just convinced that everybody is fake, phony, boring, you know, malicious, I guess. I don't know. He just has this really negative view of everybody. And, you know, it's funny, though, as the book goes on, there's a few experiences he has with people that he's just meeting who actually surprise him when he has like actual fondness for them in the moment. So he's on the train at one point going to New York, and he runs into a mother of someone he knows from school, and he has this interaction with her. And while he's having the interaction, he's like surprised that he likes her. Mm-hmm. And he invites her for a drink, even though he's 18, and she kind of calls him out on his age and gets a little irritated, but he can't even be mad because he's like, she just like had this genuineness to her that he didn't. That's what it was. It was genuineness. So he's obsessed with like people being phony, but she was genuine. Right. And that's why
it doesn't fit his world.
Right.
Worldview. Exactly. Which is interesting because kids, kids are good and adults are evil sort of in his worldview. If they're fake, you become fake. So that's the whole thing idea of what a catcher in the rye is. It refers to this thing where like you're saving the youth from growing up into this world where nothing matters. Everyone's phony and it's impossible to fit in and be accepted unless you are fake. And that we've proven and talked about before is kind of true, right? Like you are super genuine. You know what you want to be when you grow up. Like I'm going to be an astronaut or whatever. And then the world kind of makes you jaded and you're like, I can't do that. I have to become fake, right? There's like this Peter Pan element to this where you ever hear about this dark side of Peter Pan thing where he's like saving kids from being an adult. So it's almost like he's like an angel of death because that's what he's doing, right? In essence, Peter Pan is saying like, it's bad to grow up. And this is similar here. I guess that would make Captain Hook the hero, but that's Holden's whole thing. He wants to protect the kids from the adults he hates. He fantasizes about saving children and keeping them from growing up to become phony. And he wants to be their quote unquote catcher in the rye. So this feeling of not fitting in, exclusion, not identifying with other groups and people, this comes from J.D. Salinger, who was half Catholic, half Jewish. He was a soldier that came home from war. And obviously that's like, you can't come home from war in the 50s and, you know, or like the mid 40s, early 50s and just go get like, go to the soda pop and not act like you didn't see all the atrocities of World War II. Right. He was even in the camp for a little bit. So when you think about J.D. Salinger and like why he's writing this, he's like, he had his trauma, right? He was a veteran. He saw a lot of action. He spent time in a concentration camp and it changed him forever. So I bet you in a way he wanted to save the youth from having to become adults in his own way, right? Because like essentially when World War II, those are 18-year-old boys going to war. I don't know. I found like a weird connection there.
This was like supposed to be sort of like semi biographical too. So it's kind of like some of his feelings going into adulthood. I mean, that's essentially what this is all about, is that transition into adulthood. And I think one of the things that this like story really highlights is like that idea that he doesn't even really know what adulthood is. He has a general idea based on like certain behaviors he's observed, and he doesn't. And like, here's the interesting thing. It's like, it's this idea that like adulthood is about drinking, smoking, having sex.
Yep.
You know, being fake to each other, having these casual like conversations about things that he doesn't care about because, you know, he still has maybe different interests currently. This is the idea. And he tries. He tries. He does the things that he's like okay with. Like he's always drinking. He's constantly drinking. Mm-hmm. He likes smoking. So those are like easy, accessible adult behaviors. He tries having sex. Guess what? He can't because when he you know, gets a prostitute, he ultimately doesn't. He's not ready. He's scared,
which makes
that is like a big step for him.
Absolutely. And, you know, when you said earlier, which made a lot of sense, like he's on this sort of journey. It's almost like a hero's journey in a way, right? This walking through the streets of New York, he's kind of being put in situations. And maybe that's him growing up where he has to be fake. Like he has this idea like, yeah, I'm going to have sex. And that's like who I'm just going to do that right now. And then when he's confronted with the situation, he just can't do it. He's scared, right? So yes. He's fake.
Well, and that's it. He's the biggest hypocrite there is in the whole story. And that's the thing. He doesn't get it that an adult is not about these like little casual behaviors. An adult is completely different. It's a mm-hmm. maturing, you know, it's literally everything that those people lecturing him are trying to tell him that he doesn't want to hear because he thinks that they're just, he can't stand it. Like at one point, a professor he had at the prep school before he leaves, he sits down, he lectures him. And Holden gets angry because he feels like, oh, he's just going to tell me all this stuff. And like how, you know, he almost feels like how dare he's at that age where he thinks he knows everything. He can't be told different. So he gets angry, but he like goes along with whatever the conversation is. Then he has that other weird conversation with the guy who ends up trying to maybe make a pass at him as he stays at his house overnight. Yeah. There was an awkward encounter, but that guy lectures him too. And, you know, at that point, Holden's like, and that's an interesting scene, and I'm not totally sure I understand why that scene exists. It's a weird thing of like an adult trying to take advantage of a child.
Yeah.
And I don't get how that fits into the scheme of like the theme of the book, but like maybe that's something worth discussing.
It complicates things, right? Because
it goes against this idea that like what I'm saying right now, like that the things they were trying to teach him are actually the important things, not this other behavior. But maybe that's part of why. Maybe because adults can be confusing. That's here exactly. We are at one point, this guy is giving him light, good, solid life guidance. And the next minute he has him stay overnight because Holden needed a place to stay. And the next minute Holden wakes up to this guy trying to pet him and clearly was going to, you know, try making a pass at him, and Holden freaks out. So it's like, how can I trust adults?
Right. And so it confirms his, you know, suspicions about, you know, how he feels about adults, but also contradicts it at the same time.
Right.
It's such a complicated thing. And that is life, right?
Yeah.
Like some of your fears are you just, I don't know. It's really interesting. Really interesting. It reminds me of when Edith Eger was saved by, actually the Americans came to the concentration camp and she was honored, you know, on death's door. And, you know, 2 days after being liberated, she was, you know, one of her saviors attempted to rape her. So it's like, what do you do with that? You know, it's kind of a similar situation.
See, Holden is an interesting character because, see, like when you were at, the reason why I asked, like you said, you could either be a psychopath or you could be a hero. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. The entire time he is trying to convince himself of, like, he's lying to himself throughout the whole
self-deceit. Book.
He's trying to make himself okay with the fact that he has failed another school. He barely talks about his parents. The entire book, he barely talks about his parents. There is very little mention of them. The only time that really stuck out to me that he mentioned was he was packing his ice skates that his mom had purchased for him and he felt guilt about those ice skates. Other than that, he barely talks about them. So I think that that's another, like, and if we're hearing his inner monologue and he's not talking about his parents, that's probably because he doesn't want to feel bad about the fact that he's failed out of school and he's disappointing his parents.
Well, he's very self-involved. It's everything that happens to him happens to him because it's everybody else's fault and never his. Yeah. That's a very borderline kind of personality. And he probably has some untreated PTSD for not dealing with what happened with his brother. It was a different time, right? So I do think it's complicated. And I will get more into why I thought Holden was psychotic when I sort of relate him more to the people who committed some pretty serious crimes.
But he has values. He has actual values. And that goes along with so much of why he's struggling with the world. Like, he tries having relations with the prostitute and his values got in the way of that. Suddenly that felt cheap. That didn't feel special. Mm-hmm. He wanted to actually have a connection with her before he were to do anything. When she started like talking sexy to him, he got so turned off and uncomfortable because here he was like trying to have a real conversation with her because he wanted it to be something meaningful. Then the other part about protecting children. At the very end of the school, he goes, at the very end of the book, he goes to visit his sister at her school to give her a note so he can meet up with her after, so he can avoid seeing his parents. And when he's at the school, he sees somebody wrote graffiti on the wall and it says, F you, right? And then he sees it like two other places. Every time he sees it, he gets upset because in his thoughts, it's kids are going to see this. And then they're going to ask questions about what it means. And then they're going to be afraid that someone's going to do that to them. And his thoughts are all about protecting the innocence of children. Mm-hmm. And that's a value of his. Like, it really is. He gets mad at his sister at the end because he has this like fleeting thought that he's going to run away and isolate away from the world. And she decides she wants to go with him. And he's mad that she would actually give up her dreams and her potential, what he kind of did in many ways, which he probably has regret about. And he got mad at her that she would actually offer to give that up.
I think that was the crossroads in the book. I think he would have continued to spiral, but something happens with his sister. Like, she gets him. She doesn't let him down. She has the same trauma. And when she says that she will run away with him, he, instead of doing that, he takes her to the zoo instead, and he ends up making up with his parents. So there's a couple of great things there. You know, meaning and responsibility. He has to protect her, you know, first for himself. But then, you know, he's protecting him, like her, from himself in a sense, because I'm kind of spiraling here. You don't want to go down this road with me. And that makes him want to be better. And he wants to be there to help protect her from the rest of the world, too.
Yeah.
It's interesting. But I mean, we can get into more of our final thoughts about this book towards the end. But I would like to talk a little bit about the criminals associated with it. Dave, we are one of these podcasts that do talk about these kinds of things sometimes. Okay. So may I indulge myself in this?
Go ahead.
Okay, so first of all, Mark David Chapman, who murdered John Lennon, was obsessed with this book. He directly pointed to this book as a quote-unquote inspiration to kill. And, you know, this is what Holden would want me to do, is what he said. So I wonder if they're, you know, it's unfair to say, and because I'm going to name a few more people, that this book drives people to murder. Because, I mean, you mentioned the Bible earlier. I wonder how many people killed for that book, right? It's not the book's fault. But I'll go on a little bit. John Hinckley, the guy who stalked Jodie Foster, he identified with the movie Taxi Driver, and he attempted to kill Ronald Reagan, was also very much obsessed with this book. Lee Harvey Oswald was obsessed with this book. He had multiple copies of it. He had more copies of this than he did his other favorite books, Mein Kampf and Animal Farm, right? This guy, Robert John Bardo, he killed this actress from the 80s. I tried to look into her. She wasn't in a ton. She wasn't in anything I recognized, but apparently she was a rising star. He was a stalker of hers, and he became obsessed after seeing her sleep with someone on screen. So he has this feeling like he's better than that man. It's almost like Holden is, and maybe this is way off topic, but like an incel almost type of emotion, right? Like, you don't get me, so I can't have you, so you should die almost. You're not worth my time. So, I mean, these people are taking it to a next level. Holden wasn't really saying that, but how is Holden like them? I mean, he's socially awkward. He's isolated. He's alienated from his peers. When he gets depressed, he does turn to alcohol, like a lot of these guys do. He did have some sexual frustration where he couldn't, you know, sleep with the hookers for whatever reason. He's jealous, you know, right in the beginning, his ex, you know, is dating one of his roommates and he's really upset about that. And everyone's fake. So, Dave, if everyone's fake, then they're fake. They're not real, right? And if they're not real, what's their life worth? And if, you know, he puts his hope into someone and they prove to be like everyone else, you know, that's, he's going to be angered enough to kill them, like, because he's humiliated and alone again. Do you understand, like, where he, Holden was thinking, like, everyone in the world's a phony, right? And then if he finds somebody who he can kind of relate to, like maybe that woman or like one of these girlfriends, right? And then they sort of prove to him that they're just like everyone else, that how mad is that going to make him? You could, I mean, we obviously kind of have to like play pretend a little bit here,
yeah.
But I think that's what these, some of these killers are seeing, you know? So would Holden be a murderer? I mean, I don't know. If you think of the Blazers and the pretension and the prep school, and to me, it's almost, he seems like, you know, who's the guy in American Psycho?
Patrick Bateman.
It almost seems like this could be like a prequel of that. Had he not had that sister to kind of steer him in a different path.
You know, it's interesting because I'm assuming he comes from money.
Oh, yeah.
So, and I wonder if the people reading this and they making these like, you know, bizarre kind of interpretations, if they're understanding he's coming from money and he's not like this guy that's like, he's as phony as everybody else.
Yes.
You know, it's, and that's what it, so here's my reasoning for why I think that this book maybe has been misinterpreted by a select audience. There's two ways to read this book. There's the literal interpretation. You read it and you believe everything Holden's saying. So you're not seeing the hypocrisy. You're not seeing, you know, any of like how essentially what everything that he's doing, like that he's saying about others, is true about himself as well. And, you know, then there's the other way to look at it, where we get this understanding of Holden that not everything he's saying is true. A lot of the things he's saying are actually to convince himself. Because mm-hmm. if we believe it's his inner monologue, then we can understand that it's that self-deceit thing. It's that lying to himself to protect himself. He doesn't understand what being an adult is. He doesn't understand how to be an adult. And he's not even sure at times he wants to be an adult. So what he's doing is he's protecting himself from those things. But at the same time, isn't protecting children kind of being an adult?
Yeah.
It's like, so he's becoming an adult without, because you don't have a choice. Yes, you can be immature for the rest of your life. Yes, you can, you know, hang on to certain things from your childhood and try to, you know, encompass that, you know, childlike spirit. Mm-hmm. But it's, eventually you're going to become an adult. So whether he likes it or not, there's things about him that are going to transform. When he's a little kid, I'm sure he's not caring about preserving other children's innocence. No, that's a more adult thought to be having, right? And then, like, as he just goes through, there's so many positive things that you could say about Holden that you wouldn't extract if you listen to everything he says and believe it to be like factual.
Yeah, like if you kind of like back off like the actual like words, he is saying one thing that's kind of important, that, you know, everyone's kind of like fake and fitting into these groups.
I don't even know that he believes that though.
But like, not even fake though. Like almost where, I don't know, like the Nazis, right? Where everyone's thinking exactly the same. Like he's saying like, you guys aren't really seeing. It's fake in that, you know, someone says like a horrible tweet. I don't know if you remember this tweet from like years and years ago where someone said, I'm about to get on a plane to Africa and like, I hope like, you know, I don't get AIDS or whatever it is, right? Like this person was trying to like have this horrible joke, and it was so hyperbolic to them and so out there that they thought people would understand that it was a joke. And then the world came crashing down on them. And I think a lot of people were just shitting all over this person because they saw other people kind of like really tearing them down. And they were like, oh, this is what you do. Just get on board with this. Don't ask questions about what was really going on. Did you really mean that? Like, why would you say that? Just everyone like tear this person down. But that happens all the time on social media where, you know, you're almost virtue signaling, right? Where you're like, you're just saying what everyone else is saying because that is the path of least resistance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of dangerous too. Right. So conforming with everyone is dangerous, but also being completely antisocial, like Holden has its dangers too. You know?
You know, it's funny though, the word antisocial comes up.
Yeah.
But yet he's being social throughout the entire thing. He's literally calling people to hang out. Hey, let's go get a drink. You knew so and so. He says hello. Can you meet up? Like he's literally he's sad that he's alone. He makes a statement that New York is so damn lonely because he's lacking these connections. He just doesn't know how to connect, it feels like. Especially at this point in his life, he feels like a failure. He doesn't know where he fits in. You know, he's just kicked out of his school. Everybody around him, you know, is like people his age are probably still in school. So he just feels very alone.
Yeah. Which is ironic to be alone. It's like hard to be alone in New York City. So
well, that's what he essentially says for a place that like New York City, it's very easy to be alone. And, you know, the prostitute scene is, I think, is a really good example of a lot of what I'm trying to say. Like he clearly, like, you know, his intention is to lose his virginity, to become an adult, because that's what he thinks he's expected to do or he's supposed to do. So he gets into that situation, gets cold feet, doesn't want to do it anymore, tries slowing up the process. Hey, let's just talk. Hey, is it okay if we just this? And then when she's there for a reason, she has a job to do. She's supposed to be getting paid to do her job as well. When she doesn't go along with what he wants to do, or when he feels like maybe embarrassed, what does he do? He then starts like thinking bad thoughts about her. Mm-hmm. Like it's her fault. Like she's so this, she's that. Oh God. Like, you know, he's like just passing judgment on her. Not once does he admit to the reader or, you know, to himself that I'm scared. I don't want to do this. And that's where I think like it just shows you the intention of this is really like not to be taken literal. Mm-hmm. And then he has the dream sequence where, you know, he shoots the pimp and, you know, he like, but like that's such like an, again, highlighting that this is just what's in his head.
Yeah. That's what makes the book so interesting. Like hearing someone's deepest, almost real thoughts, you know?
Yeah.
So my question is like, why doesn't this book blow people away like it used to? Cause I was looking at reviews and everything and they're pretty low, which I understand in a sense. Cause you know, if you're not really trying to look for a meaning in this thing, it's, you know, it's not a whole lot happens really. Right. So, but I think in society today, the underdog is the focal point, right? We're always rooting for the underdog these days. It wasn't like that back then. People used to pile on a lot more. So also, like I was saying in the beginning too, like there was nothing like this, like something in, you know, the voice of a teenager, people really trying to understand what it's like to be inside the mind of a teenager. That was new. So to say like this stinks, it's like saying like the Beatles stink because you don't like their music. Well, without their music, you don't have a lot of the music that you have today. So without Holden Caulfield, you don't have, you know, Taylor Swift. You don't have like Harry Potter and Percy Jackson, all these like teenage angst, you know, characters.
You mentioned Taxi Driver. I feel like Robert De Niro in Taxi Driver is an adult version of the literal reading of this. Like I was saying, if you extract like the value, if you take away the values, you take away the fact that he's probably doing self-deceit and you just take him verbatim for what he's saying, that is Robert De Niro's character. He is this, he has morals in that book. He hates that like he's seeing society go down the gutter in, you know, in his view, right? Like things are like, there's a whole prostitute scene. He wants to protect the young, you know, Jodie Foster.
Yep.
In it, like there's this whole thing about it, like that character very much feels like an older Holden Caulfield if he were like this, you know, antisocial moral.
And that's why this book is on the list of top books, because that, how many times have you seen that in movies too, where like, or shows where somebody's just using the prostitute because they need comfort, right? For like a hug or some companionship. Like that's all coming from this, like all those sort of tropes are all coming from this. And that's, you know, what's interesting about this book too is you either identify with Holden or you don't really like Holden. And that's sort of a barometer for where you fit in society. So if you're the kind of fitting in, then I think you kind of don't like Holden. But if you're on the fringes of society, maybe you identify with him and you like him a little bit.
I think that this book really is one that, it's like there's a few things like movies and books that I could say changed. Like the way that I view them or read them changed like by when I've changed. Like reading this later in life was a lot different than when I read it when I was in my 20s.
Yeah, how so though?
I probably related to it more in my 20s. And I think I even probably didn't catch how much like self-deceit was happening in it. And I think I might've even like probably took away more of like, oh man, yeah, he's right. Everyone is kind of fake. And, you know, like that kind of like disaffected youth type character, I think I related to at that time because I was feeling that more than I see now. And now I kind of see this for what it is. He is a stupid adolescent. Yeah. And like he thinks he knows everything and he doesn't know anything actually. And he's just lying to himself constantly. And he just wants to be a child, but he feels forced to become an adult.
Yeah. So one of my favorite short story authors, John Updike, talks a lot about this book. Like he loves this. And his big thing is, and this is what happens in this book, is making like ordinary moments seem really like extraordinary and worth listening to. Like there's this one quick short story where it's like this guy is walking a woman up to his apartment, and all you're getting, you can tell that's really borrowed from this, all you're getting is their inner monologues. And it's like they're both considering having like a sexual little fling in that apartment, like as they're going upstairs, as they walk around a little bit. And the man ends up leaving. He's married and she's friends with his wife, and the man ends up leaving. So it's like the story, what happens in the story is two people walk upstairs, walk around an apartment and come back down. But like getting those thoughts, it just makes it so unbelievable. And like, there's so much tension and wonder. And it's really something that wasn't going on a whole lot before this book. It's really interesting, you know? Yeah. And some, a book you, like an author and books that you sort of turned me on to, which I, and again, so Chad Kluckin, I don't like Holden Caulfield. So that kind of shows me where I stand. But Kluckin's character in The Average American Male, I don't like him either. And I think it's because you're getting the hard truth inner dialogue. Like you're getting like some really intense stuff. But maybe part of the reason why I don't like it is because I don't want to admit that there's some truth to it. Like I think that he's trying to be over the top, but like it's uncomfortable maybe because
it's way too relatable. It's way too relatable. That character is scary relatable.
But like he's awful too, which is
terrible.
Which is so interesting. It's like when we talked about the, you know, Young in the Shadow, it's like, well, there it is. They're finding a way to bring out people's shadow, and it makes people uncomfortable.
I always bring this up, but when there was a class that we did together that we had to write down our thoughts for like a timed, they're like, whatever he said, like two for like a minute, 2 minutes. And we just sat there and wrote down our thoughts, and then stops us and says, all right, now who volunteers to read what they wrote down? And nobody raises their hands.
Yeah.
And I remember looking at that sheet, and I think a lot of people could probably relate to this. If you ever just write down your thoughts, you kind of look at them and you're like, oh, gross. I don't want to read that out loud. It's kind of embarrassing sometimes. And I feel like that's what this highlights. I don't think anyone would actually want to read about their own thoughts, but it is fascinating because it's relatable and it's kind of hard to look away. So it's like that thing, like, I don't like this person's inner thoughts. It makes me kind of like not like him. But then there's these moments where it's like, oh, I think I do kind of like him, or he's okay, at least. I'm embracing him a little bit more because the actions aren't the thoughts all the time, right? So there's like actions that happen that kind of balance this character. And we see that in a lot of, you know, other things, I guess.
Exactly. Like, so both with Chad Kluckin talking about like every girl that walks by, he wants to like have sex with, to do like very graphic.
I mean, it is very extreme. Like that's...
But the thing is though, right? He's not a bad guy because he doesn't say or do any of those things.
Right.
They're just in his head.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And
well, is not, that the one where there's a lot of like cheating and stuff like that? That one's not a great one.
So he is a bad guy. So, all right.
Yeah.
But, you know,
that one's, but like, but he has other books where, so he has Men, Women, and Children, Average American Male, and then one more that it's
like The Average American Family or something like that.
Yeah, I can't remember. There's three in that little, but not every character in those books is a terrible person. But their thoughts can be rather terrible at times.
I know. And it's an interesting thing to just like have a book of people's thoughts.
Yeah.
It's intense. But again, even if their thoughts were bad, right? And they were kind of doing the right thing and taking care of their family, and they live and die with like shitty thoughts, but they always did the right thing. Are they a bad person? Of course not.
Yeah.
Because you can have anything you want pop into your head. It's just it's the actions and the things you say that matter.
You know what's funny? I just thought about this. So when he sits down with his professor at the start of the novel, and the professor's lecturing him, and he's getting angry, but then he like feels sorry for the old man, and then all this stuff. So he's like, so he tells him he gives him bullshit responses, and that's literally how he puts it. I shoot the bull with him.
Yeah.
You know, just to, isn't that being phony?
Yeah.
Isn't that literally what he hates about other people doing? Like, just shooting the bull?
It's a contradiction. And maybe that's why it sort of resonates, because we're all kind of a contradiction.
Yeah. And then, like, one of my favorite scenes, and this is a weird favorite scene, when he meets up with a friend, his name's Luce.
Mm-hmm.
And he has this conversation with Luce, who he has this history with, where Luce kind of, like, you know, maybe, like, has... I guess he kind of is flirty towards guys too. So he's got a little bit of like that dynamic, but he says he, you know, often, I feel like he maybe had a lot of engagements with females as well, like a lot of sexual relations, maybe would brag about those. But now Luce comes to him and he has like this one girl. It's an Asian girl, right?
Yep.
And he's talking about how he like, Holden keeps talking to him about trying to talk to him about sex. And he's like, I don't view it that way. It's more spiritual for me. So he's kind of like evolved, right? He's become an adult. Kind of the opposite of what Holden hates about everyone, but Holden won't stop drilling him about with questions. And the guy's like brushing Holden off. And you notice Holden doesn't say, like, he makes a lot of comments about Luce during that conversation, but he's not mad at him. Because I think that guy's kind of being sort of like, maybe not genuine is not the word you would use, but he's not being phony. He's not like feeding into whatever like the stupid stuff Holden's trying to talk to him about. And at that point in time, Holden's actually being the person that he hates, right?
It's
so many times there's the example of Holden being the person he hates. And then,
well, I mean, I guess like why is Holden this way? Like, why doesn't he have and I guess this is another episode, but like he's dealing with unimaginable sadness.
Well, where are the parents?
Where are the, in isolation? Yeah, I know. And
he's never mentioning his parents. He doesn't talk about any positive praise or reinforcement that they've offered him. Any love, like his attachments are to his siblings. He talks about his passed away young brother, his little sister who he adores and he thinks the world of, and his older brother who he's kind of has resentment towards, but he's also an adult. So like he just is jaded towards him in general because he thinks he's full of BS, right?
Yeah, but maybe he doesn't talk about his parents because they're in a position now where they're going to have a conversation with him that he doesn't want to have.
Yeah.
Because he left
it's
school.
Avoidance.
Yeah, and that's avoidance.
Yeah, he's all about avoidance.
So
the Catcher in the Rye piece.
Uh-huh.
Do you know what that reference is?
Yeah, well, I mean, I took it as I picture someone like hiding in the wheat and protecting kids from, pulling kids in from growing up. I don't know. That's the sort of how I interpret that.
All right. So it's the reference comes from Scottish writer Robert Burns, Coming Through the Rye. So it's a poem, I guess. And essentially, like, Holden kind of misremembers it and comes up with his own scenario of what Catcher in the Rye means. Him being that fantasy rescuer of children, but that's not essentially what Coming Through the Rye is about. So it's kind of his own vision of it, I guess.
Okay. So there is no real like Catcher in the Rye, like someone saving children.
Correct.
I want to say one thing, like, cause you reminded me of something.
It's eating a body in the rye, but he remembers it as catching a body.
So, the quote, we're talking about misremembering quotes or whatever, misinterpreting them. Have you ever heard of the quote, blood is thicker than water?
Yeah.
And that quote is supposed to represent like your family is like the best relationship you can have, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the original quote is the blood of the covenant is thicker than the water of the womb. So that what that quote actually means is that the family you choose is stronger than the family that you're born to.
Hmm.
So people really misuse that bad boy.
Yeah.
And to re kind of like something's been bothering me since I said it. So the only reason why I mentioned that awful tweet is because I researched that because I was one of the people being like, what a piece of, who would say something awful like that? But it turns out that that person was getting on the plane with a friend, and the friend, and they were saying to each other, hey, look, like, I'm going to say this like ridiculously awful thing and everyone will know it's a joke. And then they got on the plane, and by the time they landed, they had so many like awful messages. They were fired, everything, like by the time they landed. So it was an idiot joke, but it's like, I talked about it a lot with the class when I talked about Salem, just to show how, like, you know, you can, you know, how we witch hunt people, you know? Yeah. And just because they don't, they if they go against our values, or it, we don't try to like figure out if they really did, or we don't give people second chances here. We just kind of like cut off with the head. One more thing I'll say though, they, you know, Salinger is dead, you know, rest in peace, but he would never sell the rights to make the movie because, quote, Holden wouldn't have liked that. So, you know, I don't know. That fits into one of those weird relationships with your characters, like Walt Disney and the mouse. And remember Candace Bergman's father with his dummy, like leaving him all the money.
What year was this friend?
It's a good question. 50s? Oh, I did. 51?
Oh, really?
Something like that. The story started in the 40s. Like the short stories were in the 40s. Probably like
so 40. Another like 30 years it will be out of it'll be free domain. So people will be,
and what's messed up is like people will just be able to make a movie with it, even though like the creator of the art never wanted that to be a thing.
You know, the part that I meant to mention earlier, and it's because I thought you were gonna make a comment that you didn't end up making about Holden kind of going like progressively going crazy. Is he going to like psych? I thought you were going to try to diagnose him with something like psychosis or something.
No, because I don't think that's fair to do with just when you have. No, I don't think he reaches.
Well, you know, the one thing though is that you don't really think about too much though, is I feel like he's going through sleep deprivation. Mm-hmm. Plus he's been drinking nonstop. Like his only, they don't really mention him sleeping. And the only time that they do is the time he's woken up mid sleep by the guy trying to trying to make a pass at him. So he doesn't really get sleep as far as I know.
But isn't it, so you know what's scary is like just based on his thoughts and some of these behaviors, you could totally write this stuff down. You could diagnose him with bipolar. You could diagnose him with borderline. You could diagnose him with PTSD if you wanted to, certainly depression. Yeah. So that's kind of scary.
Towards the end of the book, he does have a few moments that are like, oh wow, he's really sounding like he's losing it. Like he's talking to his, you know, his passed away younger brother while he's walking the streets. Mm-hmm. But at that point I'm like, wow, he really has had zero sleep. He has drank every night. I can, you know, he must be just like literally like going crazy because of his sleep deprivation and alcoholism.
But yeah, I mean, but if someone came in and said that to you, like, I've been up for the 3 days walking the streets, and you would probably be thinking mania. Right.
Yeah. But it's not by choice, though, is what I'm saying. Like he literally tried to sleep and then a guy tries molesting him.
Have you ever had a night like that, like out on the street?
No, I've never had a night like that where I woke up to a guy trying to molest me while I was sleeping on his couch.
You know what's funny is I got to add this too. When you were talking about that story when in grad school, when we were writing down like all our thoughts on a sheet of paper, I remember my piece of paper was blank. And I, you know, obviously maybe I had some thoughts, but maybe I just didn't want to write them because I thought that that might happen. Now everyone exchanged papers. So I was like really going ahead with that. Like, I don't want to exchange papers and go through that.
See, and I did it very like
honestly.
Yeah. Yep. And then when he did that, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
But I knew that he wasn't going to have us actually share them.
No, because we all would quit school.
Yeah. That's right. Like, in my head, I'm like, there's no way he's going to force us to do that. That's crazy.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, very, very interesting, important book. I don't know. Is it a recommend? Like, who do you recommend this book for? Adolescents? Or is it better to read as an adult?
I think it's better. I think you'll get more out of it as an adult. If you're looking to relate to the character, I don't know that that's the greatest thing. And maybe that's kind of fitting into what you're talking about with, you know, some of the personalities that maybe misinterpreted Holden's character or, you know, what he's going through. I think that as an adult, there's a lot to extract from this character and understanding teens. Actually, yeah. I think it's helpful a helpful book to, you know, if you work with teens, to kind of get a good sense of what that transition is like. So the ducks, you brought up the ducks. I keep, there's things that I wanted to touch on that I keep forgetting. That really represents something. So the idea of ducks, well, first of all, he's identifying their transition from, you know, spring to winter. Where do they go? It's also kind of like, isn't that highlighting his like naivete? Is that what you would say? Like, who doesn't know that that they're migrating? He's like, what do they freeze? What do they, does someone take them? He doesn't know this. And that shows how like little attention he's paid in school. So like his education is, you know, supposed to be top notch, but he clearly didn't pay attention. But
Dr. Jennifer Melfi like went through all this with Tony Soprano. Did you know that?
Yeah, I remember. I kind of don't remember what the conversations were.
Like ducks were flying away. It was sad.
Yeah. Just sad about it.
Yeah,
it's transition. But then, you know, there's an interesting encounter he has with the cab driver. So do you remember that?
Probably.
He has a cab driver named Horowitz, and he's like, I listened to an audiobook this time around for a lot of this. I kind of hated hearing someone talk in their dialect, because it was like, hey, Mac, a lot of like, it's that, like that style of talk. But he's like, I don't know, Mac. He's like, but I know the fishes stay right where they are. And this was really interesting. He goes, he's like, they don't go nowhere. They don't, I forget how he worded it, but essentially,
you're doing the accent now, and I appreciate it.
The fish don't go anywhere. They don't ignore the ice. They just stay through it. What could the ice represent? Difficulty in maybe difficulty in the transition, difficulty in anything, like a difficult time, and kind of being able to stay through it versus flying away. So he, Holden's hanging on, and this, Holden's the duck. Holden is a duck.
Yeah, he is.
Holden's hanging on to this idea that there must be somewhere you go when things get hard, or when you want to get away from the things that are challenging, right? So if the ice is the thing that's challenging, the fish, an adult saying this too, the fish don't go anywhere. They just deal with it, right? They stay right where they are. Holden's got this idea in his head, like there must be some magic place you go when things get hard. And that he keeps coming back to this idea of like going into the woods, living alone in the woods, finding a partner, and it's living away from everybody and not having to deal with all the people. People are hard for Holden. They're his ice, right? So he's wondering, where do I go? Where do the ducks go? It's more than just nostalgia for his past. It's also representative of the transition he's going through and the way that he views that transition. He like, wants
how
to be
do you,
the ducks.
How do you do this? I don't know how to do this. New
and thing. That cab driver is saying, you got to be the fish.
Yeah. Because everywhere you go, there you are. All right, Dave.
We have a review.
Oh.
You knew that, Craig.
I know.
Don't give me that BS.
You know, the second we get one.
I know you do. I can't read the whole title because for whatever reason, my app won't let me read the whole title, but because it does dot, dot, dot. It says easy listening, clinically informed, and dot, dot, dot. So I'm just going to say, and fantastic and amazing. So 5 stars, and this is from Christopher with a K and also a dot before the last R. Or it's Christoph R. I don't know.
Could be either way.
Could be either way. Appreciate you both ways. I love that this podcast takes a more lighthearted stance on topics as well as a range of topics than many other therapy/psychology shows, while still maintaining accurate and clinically relevant talking points and explanations. The humor is much appreciated, and dynamic between hosts comes across as natural as possible. My favorite podcast as a counselor in training. That is music to my ears.
Christopher, either way. Yes, what a lovely thing to say.
That is awesome.
Dave, and we are kind of natural, just kind of like it's from day one, right?
From day Kismet. One. Kismet. Kermit, you mean?
Whatever. All right. So Anything else? Please rate and review, please, because that means so much to us. Send us a message. We love that too. Any kind of contact. And
check us out on the Buzzsprout subscriptions page. If you get a chance, you can find that on our social media profile on Instagram. Also, check out our social media if you don't already. We struggle making posts, but we do our best. We try to do it when we can. And also, for those of you that want to keep up with the books that we, you know, dabble in from time to time, you know, one great way to do that, like I did this time, is listen to an audiobook so you can do it on the run. And if you would like a free trial of Audible, they're doing 30 days for free. If you go to audibletrial.com/UTGN. So go there for free 30-day trial so you can keep up on the books, because we're going to have more coming down the pipeline.
Yeah, you know what I'll tell you to grab on Audible? Elephant Man. Actually, that one you might want to just, because it's a shorty. When you're getting a free trial, you kind of want to get a big old book.
It's 30 days, Greg. They can do that amongst other things for 30 days.
Get the Elephant Man, because that's going to be the next one.
Yeah, get a bunch. Get some psychology books. Get whatever you want.
Yeah.
audibletrial.com/UTGN. All right. Everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. Hope you enjoyed this. Hope you got to read Catcher in the Rye at some point prior to this. There was some general context to this conversation. But if not, you know, definitely go and give it a listen, read or listen. Actually, it's not on Audible. I did look. That's why I didn't say the Audible trial before this one. But okay. Now you should. You should definitely give it a read, so you kind of have some context to this episode. But yeah, thank you very much, everyone. Have a great night. See you later.